Okay, guys, what's up, and welcome back to Creative Combos, where we talk about creative stuff and anything, you know, we do with creators. And we have another special guest today. You may know him as on Instagram as Photos by Francis. He's also known by Bo, Gary. So which of the names do you prefer?
Oh, it's so weird hearing that. Yeah, I don't know. Just Gary's fine, I guess. Lately, a lot of people are calling me Francis. That's fun, you know. It makes Francis me feel like my personality is split. I like it.
So
whatever's easier for you.
Okay, then let's start with it. Well, what's the origin stories? What's your real name?
Oh, my real name?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Okay, so basically, my nickname is Gary because my real name is Sherfaldo Francisco Sloat, and nobody knew how to say Sherfaldo when it's written down, so we just took the first three letters, G-E-R, and I was like, Gary works, that's fine.
I pronounced it in my head, Gerfaldo, because I thought Gary.
Yeah, exactly, so.
Me too.
Yeah, the thing is, like, most people pronounce it Gerfaldo. And, like, at some point of the lagere school, I was just like, I'm going to stop correcting people because that's just my name now. But eventually, I was just like, just go with Gary.
Yeah. Is that kind of short, catchy ring to it? And so Francisco is your second name, and that's what you go by with your photography, I guess.
Hell yeah.
It sounds so Victorian, like Francis Drake.
I know. I'm super glad I got that name. Because, like, it's also, I'm very introverted, obviously, you know, and I think that's also a reason why I have, like, many different names, because I don't like people associating me with certain things. For example, Bo. Almost nobody knows of Bo. You do, though. That's cool. Hell yeah. But, you know,
yeah.
I like the fact that nobody really knows who it is, what the heck it is, you know. It's great. It makes me feel more comfortable when I do things, when I mess up, especially. I'm like, yeah, nobody heard that. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But it's stated right here in this Zoom call, so.
That's true.
Yeah, that guy gave it away, but I actually know Bo from... When I guess you're still doing music, but when you shared some stuff, music stuff earlier in the days, a few years ago, check some of it out, and that's how I came to know Bo, and okay, that's the face to Bo. So, what was that origin story?
What, the name or the
yeah,
hobby?
The name and combining it with music.
I don't have a good reason. I just like the way the word looks. Like if there had to be a name, I mean, origin story or whatever, it's also just because, like, I like the name Bo, and I always wanted to name my first child Bo, but, you know, I'm like super young. I'm like 52, right? So I was like, okay, I'll just name this passion project Bo. It's like my child, you know? So yeah. I guess that's it. But it's also just because I like the way it looks, you know?
Well,
and I love the
beautiful
fact that a lot...
Got him.
and I love the fact that, like, a lot of Surinamese people, like, don't pronounce it right. I don't know. That makes me laugh, I guess. I don't know why. I'm like, yes, I am Bao. Yeah, that's me.
Bao.
What's the common pronunciation? Bao.
Definitely bao. Definitely.
Well, do you have something for French themes? Because they kind of have all your names kind of have a French ring to it. Cher, that's true. Cherfaldo,
it's not on purpose. It's not on purpose. But like my actual names sound that way because my biological dad is from Brazil. So I guess that's where those come from, you know. It's not very French, but that's why they sound kind of foreign. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, we got your names down. We'll go with Gary from now on. I think that's the easiest, most memorable one. And
love it.
It reduces the risk of mispronunciation for the future.
Fair point.
Okay, so Gary, how you been? You're, I guess, located in Suriname now, I guess, like they've been locked down. Got some time on your hands doing passion projects. So what do you do nowadays?
Post lockdown, it's been very, very interesting, you know, because I'm in a very lucky situation where I'm not, you know, I'm not struggling too hard, and I'm actually, it feels great to be able to have this time to spend on music and whatnot. So that's great. I'm hoping to release some music soon, but you know, it's fine. It's whatever. I'm really happy about like photography going well though, because that pays bills, you know? The music has never made me a cent, you know? Like that is purely for fun, I guess you could say. So that's that basically. And that's also why I was late, you know? I was literally working on this song. And I just lost track of time. Yeah, though, I just lost track of time, man. It happens.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this guy just shared something on Instagram. Why isn't he replying?
Bro, I'm so bad. Like, the worst part is I saw the message, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to forget that. Don't worry. And I totally did.
All good, oh, man, all man. Good. It's a Sunday. So can't blame you.
I know, right? Good times.
What's the last minute rescheduling?
I like it.
So, well, I guess let's start with, before we go into photography, music, because basically that's the first, I guess, how I got to know you is through your music. So was that something you've done from early on? How did you get into music? And your style is pretty like mellow, like chill type.
Thanks.
Or how would you describe it?
Describe my style? I don't know.
Where do you get the inspiration or for that type of sound?
Well, it depends on which one you're talking about, because I have very like angry music that I don't promote because it's like therapeutic. It's just me yelling into a microphone. It's not supposed to sound good. It's just you know, letting shit
your
out.
Expression.
Exactly, right? And then there's like the mellow stuff that you refer to. I think my style for that is I don't know, my dad was a big fan of like super old school rock, and I think I take inspiration from that. And then when I was like 13 to 16, I got guitar lessons from Santosh Benny, who is so good, and he put me onto like amazing music as well. And I think that's where I steal some stuff when it comes to like the older generation. And then me as a 23-year-old millennial, I guess, just the music that we hear nowadays is so, so good to me. Like bedroom pop, there's so many good bands. And even in Suriname itself, like Carter, fucking Fedi Hart now, they're so good. It boggles my mind. Just today, I was thinking about Oath, back when he used to make music. I was like, oh, that was so good. I don't know. I guess that. A little bit of everything, a little bit of old school rock, a little bit of locals, but like small locals, and then like bedroom pop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Awesome. And I guess you pick, is guitar your like main instrument you play? Play any other types of instrument?
Yeah. I mean, I half-assed my way through playing guitar. I used to have a keyboard, but I sold it. So yeah, basically all I play is guitar, like physically, and everything else is like sampled. Yeah.
So, since you're busy with a new song right now or editing something, let's see some behind the scenes. What's the process like if you're talking about sampling, like compiling, composing the songs, the sound bits? How do you go through
all right. All right. Interesting. Let's see. How do I switch the camera?
So, would you argue that you don't need to be able to play instruments well to make music?
Hell no. I'm pretty sure that most of the producers at I forget what they're called. You know which one I'm talking about, the one with the green logo. I'm pretty sure they can.
Shots fired.
No. It's a compliment. Well, okay. Anything. But my point is, nah, you don't need to. I'm not even good at music, to be honest. That's why I never play live. So basically, this is like a keyboard thing I recorded. It's fine, you know, it's whatever. It's nothing amazing. It's incredibly boring, actually, as a matter of fact. And then, usually I like to add drums. And then where a lot of the sampling comes from is in like these tiny parts right here, where it's just like just singular sounds. It's a pain in the ass. I'm like, why do I do this to myself? There's so many other ways to do this, but you know, it's cool. I like it. It's like, I don't know. It makes me feel cool. I guess that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
No, that's pretty cool. That's a lot of layers as well.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's probably way too many, to be honest. Like, I think that's also why I sit on songs as long as I do for like years, because just last week I was listening to like the whole album that I want to release in December maybe. And I was listening to it, and even then I was like, there's something there I don't like. I'm going to take it out. It's too messy. So like, you know, I don't like to call myself a perfectionist, because it's still going to be bad in like some way. And maybe in 5 years, I'll be like, I wish I took out that one cowbell. But it's whatever, you know. I forgot the question.
No, basically, it's a bit about the process. But how do you get, I guess, that ear or sound interpretation on, you know, what sounds good and how to... you know, use a drum here. As you said, you use a lot of samples. Where do you even get the samples from?
I paid for some of them. And then I just, sometimes when I have nothing interesting, I'll just like Google free samples, whatever comes up, to be honest. Because like, for example, the ones I paid for were like a Vengeance pack. And then half of it was great, you know, but half of it is just bad. It's unusable. I'm like, that's wasted money. I'm not making any money, so I don't want to put money into it, except for, you know, the guitar, whatever. But
maybe that's how they got them. Like, it's I sometimes believe if they put out samples, it should be really good ones and not just half bad, and just it's like
right.
Putting coconuts in a bag of lemons just to put up the weight.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Because like that's how they'll like hook you in. They're like, yeah, look, there's 100 samples, but there's like 10 good ones.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, thanks. That's useless. and I think that's also a very interesting part about like, because a lot of people, I know that, for example, James Francis does it because he told me so, or like, I write maybe 20 songs and then like 5 of them make it onto something I want to release. And he said he does the same, because it's I think a very big or a very important part is just knowing when something's not good enough. Like, even if it means a lot to me, or if it sounds good, but it doesn't mean anything, I'm like, you know, it's not worth releasing if it doesn't mean anything.
Mm. Okay.
You know what I mean?
I guess this to separate that, what if you remove the meaning, anything personal, you know, opinion,
yeah,
just aside for a bit, what would you consider a good sound?
As in,
okay, for
you, example,
yeah. Well, what do you interpret it as a good sound? Like, okay, how deep it is, the layers, or just the harmony?
I have two examples, and I love both of them. So like, I'm not throwing shade. I love them both. It's amazing. But for example, Fetty Hut, his like old introspective music, I love it so much. But part of me is slightly, it feels wrong when I find out that he didn't make the beat himself or whatever, you know? But then when I listen to Carter's Loud Whispers, for example, and I know that he produced all of it himself, that blows my mind. Even if some of the lyrics aren't amazing, like just the entirety of it just feels alive. It feels organic. Like he knows exactly where he put which sound or which guitar part. Whereas with Fetty, I still love it. It's really good because of the meaning that it has behind it, but not because of the, it doesn't feel his, but it's still really, really, really good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Is it because it's not, I guess the sound bits, as you said, not produced by himself compared to like the effort's not been put in the sense of actually doing the physical, making the sounds?
Yeah, but that's just like in my case, because that bothers me, you know what I mean? Like, it's not that it's bad, especially not with Fetty, because he writes in a way that I could never write. I have a lot of problems, or I have most of my issues stem from lyrics. It's, words are difficult, man. So like, I love the fact that he can do that, but also way, way, way back, for example, when I found out that on J. Cole's record, I don't remember which one, a lot of the sounds that I loved were samples, and that also threw me off. I was also like, oh man, like you could tell listening to it that it was studio recorded and it was so, so, so good. And then when I heard the original, I was like, oh no, they only added like kick drums and 808s. That's, you know?
Okay.
It takes you guys me out talking, of the experience a tiny bit.
You guys are talking French right now.
I'm not that technical on the music aspects as well, but you know, I enjoy good music.
Yeah,
so that's the degree of my. So that's why I was interested. What as a, I guess, someone who makes music, musician, connoisseur of samples. What would you consider? That's why I was interested in what you consider like a good sound.
Cool. All right. Well, I mean, for example, one of my favorite albums is Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly. And that's because, in my opinion, that's like a fantastic, amazing combination of so many different talents. You know, like there's actual, what's his name? The bassist. Damn it. All right. Thundercat. Yeah. Thundercat, for example, amazing basses. And he's like, that's exactly what he did with everything. You know, he took the best or his favorites and put them all together, made the sound, and it sounds so good. So yeah, I don't know. Like, even if there's mistakes in it, I like when it feels human. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Human. No reference to a certain song, you know.
that's a good album though, Human.
That's a good
album.
The Tanga album was fantastic. There was like no bad songs on it. All of them were great.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfect example of like choosing your favorite. Sure, he wrote like 20 songs or 30 songs and he chose his 5 favorites. That's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, that's, I think when we talked to him on one of the previous episodes, I always said like, when he writes, it's only like a small percentage that actually makes it out in the world.
Yeah.
That people see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That takes some discipline, man. I love that.
So what's quite why I was asking about the samples and stuff and talking about needing to be able to play an instrument to actually make music or not. I'm not sure if you know him. There's a YouTuber, Kurt Hugo Snyder, who does a lot of, I guess, production and challenges. He can play a lot of instruments as well. But for example, with a potato, he samples potato sounds like peeling it, cutting it, chewing it, and made that into an actual song.
Wait, is it the same guy that put out watermelons and he plugged it into some kind of contraption and started making music of it? I saw a video of that.
I'm not sure if it's the watermelon one, but for example, one of them that became kind of a meme on TikTok, Instagram, he was playing on a washing machine, the sounds. He was pressing the buttons and making music with that.
Yeah. I saw that one. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, so, I think I also love that shit, but like not that far. Because like, for example, I've never seen those, but I have seen similar videos from a guy called Dan Mays, where he like makes sounds with like just one brick or like shoestrings or something like that. I think it's amazing. But I think it's even better when you like go halfway, like you make half a song normally and then add in those samples. Like I just love it when shit like that happens. Like I think X did it where he sampled his car beeping sound on one of his greatest hits. And I think Death Grips at some point sampled the sound that a Hasfa nurse makes when you like turn it on, but it's not on. It goes and I'm like, yeah. That's amazing. Why is that in the background of the song? I don't know, but I love it.
Yeah, it's like everyday sounds you would kind of take for granted.
Exactly.
But then they layer it, you know, process it in a certain way. And it actually sounds amazing
exactly.
In the end product.
I love that.
It adds, I guess, that depth, that flavor to the whole finished song.
Exactly. It's also that like familiarity. That's like why sometimes when people see quote unquote bad photographs, as in they're not professional looking, but they have a feel to them. It's just somebody sitting on a bed or something, maybe looking at old photos. And I'm like, yeah, this feels right. It's so familiar. It's not propped up. It's not set up. It's just like, oh, I have a furnace just like that. It makes the same sound. Amazing. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
That's like two sides of the coin. You got a technicality, a lot of technicals, but knowing that is just half. I would say not even half of the equation. The technicals are really, you know, baseline.
I feel.
So, I guess. Your new single probably releasing December, right?
Hopefully.
Well, new single or new album? How many songs you projecting put on it?
Honestly, it's been a wild 2 years of just writing, so I have a lot of songs, but I don't know, like, how much I should release at a time, you know? I don't want to overwhelm people either. So I think I'm only going to release like 9. Yes, that seems like a good number. Maybe 10, just to make it round. Yeah.
Just like 2020. Maybe.
Exactly, right? And even then, 10 seems like a lot. So I don't know. I'm still thinking about it. But I also have like 10 instrumental tracks that I just want to release, just because either I'm not going to put vocals on it or I feel like somebody else could put vocals on it, so I'm just going to release them for free. If people want to like use them, they can use them.
That's good.
Yeah,
nice idea,
right?
Yeah, no, that's cool. Before we go into the photography part, so what's your, I guess music is a way to express yourself, but what's, and you said you don't want to overwhelm people with releasing so much. So what's your trajectory with music for the coming, I guess, for the future? I'm not going to bound it to a few years, I guess. Well, what do you want to achieve with your music aside from, you know, that self-expression?
Well, that's a tough one because I like, I'm constantly in a state of wanting to quit music because mostly because it's like, not only is it a lot of time and effort to make it sound good, it's getting like harder and harder to keep up. Because for example, like I wrote a whole album 2 years ago and then my computer just crashed and I lost it. And I'm like, it's fine. So that's a little annoying, but shit, where am I going with this? Yeah, I definitely want to release music, but only because I very recently asked my like friends, I guess, if I even should, because I'm just writing it for me at this point, because it's not popular. It's not the typical song structure that's supposed to be catchy or whatever. You know, there's rules to it. Like if you YouTube it, like, oh, you have to do this and then repeat the words, only 6 words at a time, or else people will drift with their thoughts. Like, I don't care. I'm just trying to write anything I want, anything I think of. So like, but what I have found is that like most of the people or most of my friends who do listen to my music, like find a certain melancholy to it. And then they relate in some type of way, even if they're not sad people, like in general, like when they listen to it, they go, damn, that was a little deep.
Could you define what melancholy is?
It's like a lingering sadness, I suppose. It's not quite depressed, but it's definitely not happy.
It's between sad and depressing, I believe. Wow. It's the middle ground.
Yeah,
but if Daft Punk would have thought the same thing, we wouldn't have Daft Punk, because that's how they got their name. Because somebody wrote up like, I don't know what kind of sound they're making, it's really daft, and they came up with Daft Punk. That's Daft exactly Punk. That's how they came up with the name. Because somebody wrote about it and it's like, nah, it's not it. And boom, look at them now. They're making collabs with The Weeknd. Yeah. Any superstar. Like they have their own niche. Let's put it that way. They have their own niche. And I don't know, but those albums were my first albums when I started like really get into graphic design or illustration. Let's put it as illustration. I listened to those albums for hours and hours after my computer, and that's how I learned how to check out for some kind of music notes, or what you call them, like bass, treble, beat, all those stuff. Like how they need to blend in so well, like somehow it looks like it's I don't know, it gives you a kind of hypnosis, like you shake your head without even knowing, you just nod to the music, you like you
it's like that
you
state of
dance.
Flow.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Hell yes. Man, so like that's something that I do find very interesting, like when people find inspiration from a medium outside their own. Like for example, you find inspiration in music to do graphic design. I do find that very interesting. I love that.
Yeah, I can do that for hours. Like literally, it puts me, if I have a good album, right now it's After Hours by The Weeknd, right now. Yeah. Because I drift in many genres. And the way I like, The Weeknd, After Hours, it kind of moves toward the part of Daft Punk. Like they have a certain niche or genre where it's a bit of back to the 80s, like all laser and all those kind of stuff. That kind of feel it has. It gives a nostalgic feel, and in the end, and the sound that Vikan makes with his voice blending with the music, man, I can sit literally for hours till midnight just punching those shortcuts on my keyboard while just listening on the album on repeat. And it's amazing what music can do to you. And that's how I started to respect more music, like different genres. That's
true. How I came to it. I think I have almost a similar process, but it's not always the same, where like I will put a movie that I really like and or liked back in the day on, like without the sound while I'm working on music. And then like every now and then I'll glimpse up and like see that moment. And then like maybe I'll remember what's happening. You know, maybe it's a sad moment, maybe it's a happy moment. Like without the sound, the subtitles might be on if they have them. And then I'll be like, oh shit, yeah. And I'll, maybe I'll write something about it in the song. Mm. So I do like that cross-platform type inspiration.
that's quite nice. Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. I think it's also...
Yeah, sorry. go on, sorry.
Oh, okay. I think it's also because like, I've not had a boring life, but I'm not like interesting, you know what I mean? So like when I see something that somebody directed or somebody filmed and it speaks to me in some type of way, even though I've never lived through whatever might be happening, because I like some weird ass movies. So like it's nice, and I like try to recreate that, because like the music I'm writing, nobody's gonna know what I mean literally. They'll just hear it after the fact and then come to their own conclusion, you know? Maybe when I say something like, her habits held her hostage, it's like, it could mean anything to anybody, you know? Whoever the person may be that's hearing it might think back to their own pain and their own bad habits that are holding them hostage, no matter what it is, even though I know specifically which one I'm referring to. And I like that.
Yeah. Huh, pretty cool. I guess for me, one of the currently artists I really like, it's just not the music. It's not only the music, Alan Walker. It's the whole, I guess, story and culture, like he built around the Walker brand.
Yeah,
it's quite intriguing. It's like apocalyptic dystopian, but yet uplifting in a way. And
that's a beautiful way to describe it.
Is it the guy from the song Faded?
Yeah, Faded. That's one of the first songs. And he just started like in his bedroom, like producing with samples like that too. And now he's international DJ collabing with. He doesn't do his own vocals. He always has someone else do the vocals, but the sounds and the production he does, that's just
I feel that, man. I feel like a lot of my inspirations were also like all just started in their room, in somebody's basement, you know, on somebody's couch. When I first started writing music, it was also just instrumental, and I used to listen to Flume, which is like not even close to anything I was writing at the time, because I was just writing like guitar music, and he was like all EDM. But just the fact that he was just some kid back then, you know, before he blew up, it was so cool, so inspirational. And like JPEG Mafia, people like that, I love it.
And funny thing is now we're kind of living in a, you know, the COVID world. Everyone has a mask, and the mask was kind of his brand. He always wears a mask in public.
Oh, hell yes, bro.
So it's shit. Like, he was already living in the future.
He was prepared, bro.
He knew it. Oh, he knew God. It.
Third eye open.
Anyways, you just mentioned you like some weird movies. Well, what would you consider a weird movies by your standards? Like,
Hitchcock.
Hit us, like give us a benchmark.
All right, so, do y'all know Nicolas Cage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So he's like notoriously famous for bad movies nowadays, right? However.
Yeah.
There's these two movies. First one is called Mandy that he's in is fucking phenomenal. It's so good. It's absolutely beautiful. It's amazing, honestly. It's like split into three halves. The first half is unbelievably beautiful, slow paced, very atmospheric. It's so good. I could watch it 100 times the first half. And then like it slowly becomes like this absolutely insane 80s throwback slasher killer movie. And I'm like, whoa, that was amazing. Take me on this joyride. And then the other one is called Color Out of Space. That is just uncomfortable.
Hell yeah, bro. Yo, Color Out of Space is so psychedelic in the end. You'd be like, what happened?
Bro.
It goes to a climax, and then boom, gone. And like in the end, the narration goes on, and you'd be thinking, okay, what happened? Shall it go on? Shall it start again? Wow.
Exactly,
that
bro. I love that shit. That movie fucked with my head. I'm like, yes, this movie
has like, it builds up a suspense, and then it has a fake climax. Like you think like, okay, this is it. But then you're like, no, there's another level. like there was a moment like when I don't know if I'm going to spoil something here, but there was a moment.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Yeah, but go ahead.
Okay. There was a moment where the mom and the son are blended in one.
Bruh.
And they're trying to assimilate the sister. I was like, what the hell is this? I was like, bro, it messed me up for a night, man. It messed me up.
Not gonna lie, me too. I wasn't ready for a shit like that. Yeah. And the shit with the llamas, bro, the alpacas, bro. I wasn't ready.
Hey, but I was rooting for the dog that he would survive. But yeah.
Rest in peace, buddy.
Yeah,
everybody.
The dog was really
why is it always a dog?
I know, right? Like as soon as the dog's introduced, I'm like, nah, he's gonna die, man. Shit.
And I'm
gonna send John Wick after you.
Yeah. And the guy who directed Color Out of Space, he said he's gonna make two more movies just like it in that Lovecraft-esque genre. And it's gonna be. I'm excited.
No.
Bro.
Yo, but speaking about Lovecraft, have you seen Lovecraft Country already?
No.
Oh, you should definitely check it out. Lovecraft Country, directed by Jordan Peele.
What?
Yeah.
No way, bro.
Yeah, what? Yeah.
Hmm.
Bro, I'm bookmarking it.
Oh, wait. I seen the trailer of this one, I think.
Yeah. It's badass. Yeah. It's badass.
Bro, it's badass. Jordan Peele is on some next level shit, man. He's good.
The Us was really good.
These are
Us was
quite
unbelievable.
Us. Like
yeah, right? Lovecraft Country?
Yeah.
It says 2020. Yes.
Yeah,
it's
2020.
It's recent. It's last month.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm hyped.
I watched every episode already. I think tomorrow the next one is dropping. So hell yeah.
Yeah, bro,
no, shit. but episode 3 just like episode 3 was like no, this is it.
No spoilers.
I don't want
to
watch it. Okay, but back
oh my
to
God. I'm hyped.
But back to the movie. Color of out of space. It like the whole coloring, like the whole color grading they did in the movie. It looks like you were like on some kind of drugs or something.
Shit.
Like,
I love that in movies.
Yeah,
I love it when it's done right. Like in Color Out of Space, in Mandy, in Annihilation, in Midsommar, They do the psychedelic scenes so good. I love those scenes. I could watch them forever.
Oh, wait. Yeah, Annihilation is also one.
No, I was just about to gonna say I see some of the posters, and you just mentioned the psychedelic theme. I think I get a feeling now, like what triggers, you know?
Yeah,
it's really the vivid pinks and your neon greens
and the reds.
Yeah, stuff. Oh my god, dude! Like 2 days ago, I watched a movie called I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Yo.
I heard about
that. That shit was deep. That shit was crazy deep. It's like, it's the most trippy movie I've ever watched, but like in a great way until it was confusing. So it's like, you guys should watch it. It's pretty good. It's pretty good, but it's really fucking weird. Not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Not in like a creepy, scary way, just in like a psychological way. It's like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah. No, I have acquired taste for those. Not all of them, but I'm down to giving these recommendations a shot. Thanks for those.
Okay.
We'll list them down.
Not gonna lie, like I'm not a big horror movie fan. For example, I recently also watched The Void. Because I thought it was going to be like Mandy, where it's like a psychological thriller, and then it's like a little bit of horror on top. But it was mostly horror, and I don't know. Maybe I should watch it again, because I didn't like it at all. Even though it has like great reviews, I was like, I don't know. It was mostly
I have the same thing. I haven't watched even Gemini Man already. It's like
the Meanie Man.
Yeah.
Is that the one from Will Smith, Gemini Man?
I did watch
Gemini Man. Not gonna lie, because I enjoyed it, but only for the frame rate.
Oh.
I was like, this looks nice. It's so smooth, and then it got boring after a while.
Yeah, and that's the thing. What I'm thinking about movies. Sometimes they're getting hyped up by the trailer, and when you watch it, you'll be like,
I never watch trailers because like I feel like they either spoil shit nowadays or they completely lie to me.
Yes.
You know, they're like, oh, it's gonna be a fast movie, and then the movie's slow as fuck. And I'm like, oh my god, false advertisement.
It's making expectations that they can't meet.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's like like every movie trailer now is just like boom. Like Inception sound insert here. Like no.
Yeah.
No, but talking about Inception, just to close up this topic, that movie is talking on a psychological level as well. Oof.
Yeah. Till now, I cannot figure my head around it. Till now, I can watch it now, and in the end, I'm like, so what happened?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a dream or not?
Yeah.
I'm so happy that they left it at that, you know? Because, like, I feel like a lesser studio would have been like, okay, now part two, give them the answer. Yeah. I don't want to know the answer. Yeah. I want to be left in this limbo.
Yeah.
And I love that. That's what's kind of making it, like, timeless. It's like
exactly.
A timeless movie.
It's a loop.
Hell yeah. Jeez.
All right. Okay. That was a nice short long sidetrack on movies. let's get back to the boring but yet interesting life of Francis now. Francisco.
Oh, yeah. So
transitioning from Bow, I guess, Bow's still there with the music, but then going to photography. Well, what is that like? Why'd you even get into photography in the first place?
Honestly, it's like not even because like I feel like a lot of photographers I've spoken to have like this, somebody in their family did photography and they thought it was cool and then they got into it. Like I didn't have any of that. I just, for some reason, I got a Peter McKinnon video 2 years ago.
Hell yeah. Oh,
Peter McKinnon.
It was like all of a sudden I got him and I was like, yo, this shit looks good, bro.
Yeah. What?
How did he do that? And, and like this was like right after I came out of the hospital for my spine surgery, which was great. And then and I just needed something to do. And I was like, okay, this is like an art form, you know? And I was like, after I started watching Peter McKinnon, I started watching a lot of film photography YouTubers, which I found more artistic and interesting, although Peter McKinnon is definitely still top tier when it comes to product photography. Mm-hmm. It's just like, everything about it I thought was amazing. And then I watched this is all before I got a camera. And then I watched a masterclass on Annie Leibovitz, and she was so good with like expressing why she took a picture and how. It's like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And I was like, fuck it, I'll get a camera.
she has top class. Like, she has top class.
Yeah.
Is, and like, it's no joke there, literally.
Bro, I literally tried to like look up her book, how much it cost. Her most most sold book is like $500, man. It's like, yeah. What?
Yeah.
But I mean,
she is top tier, like right there.
For sure, man, for sure. And then like I guess she inspired me also because like some of the pictures were just amazing. And then some of them I thought were like meh, you know, they were good, just not great. Mm. And I was like, oh, okay, but I love that. It makes it feel more human, you know. They can't all be bangers. So like, I'll get a camera. I'll try my hand at it. And I just got it. I shot my cats a whole bunch of times.
With the camera, right?
Yeah.
With the camera.
Yes, yes. Totally. Wink. Yeah. Yeah, and I just shot whatever I could find. And then I don't know why, I got really lucky, I guess. Or maybe I was cocky, because like I got my camera at like at the end of 2018. Maybe in November or something. And then January 2019, I got my first paid gig. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, let's go. And then I guess I just, I don't know, it was fun.
And then it started to rise because I saw him making pictures for the thrift shop and for Christian Puran, and I was like, okay, this is good. It's probably going somewhere. I remember those days. Yeah, I remember those days. Yeah,
man, I love this shit, man. Also because like I feel like it's a lot easier for people to process an image. It's like you just scroll past it. You're like, hey, that's a good image, like, you know. Whereas like with music, it's like, what, I gotta give out 2 minutes of my day? Nah, son. It's like, so it's a lot easier for people to appreciate a picture, I feel like. So that's also a reason why I like it, like doing it a lot more. It's like not just that it's making me money, it's just also when I do it for free or for fun, people still like it. And I'm like, yes, that's nice. It feels good. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I forgot what the question was.
there was no question after that. But the question was basically why did you get into photography in the first place? But I think you mentioned it pretty clearly. With Annie Leibovitz, that especially the process and the meaning why she does things. I think for you, what I could observe is similar to your music. It's that part of, you know, why. Exactly. What does it mean to the individual? And in that same like thought process, you're also like what you did with the music. Oh, I put that sound. Oh, I'm going to put this light here to, you know, add some of that. Exactly. Atmospheric dramatic effect or whatnot.
Exactly. And that's also something that I found back when I did a behind the scenes shoot for like what do they call it again, Forward Motion, the way that they set up their cameras, their lights to film. it reminded me so much of like everything that she said when it comes to like lighting and lighting for purpose, not just lighting to make it look good. And I was like, oh, that's nice. I like it. I can like find it back in my work or in their work. I like that very much.
Nice. I gotta ask this question because, you know, in photography, film, since you mentioned it, lighting is like key. How did you, I guess, learn to work with light?
Honestly?
Like, yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, so what happened was I started getting some jobs, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. And all of a sudden somebody came up to me and said they want a poster done for, or at least I had to shoot the pictures for a poster of their product, which was like a bottle of, what's it called? Fruity C or whatever. And then I was like, okay, perfect. I got it. And then once I got the product, I was like, okay, I have no idea how to do this. Let me figure it out real quick. It's like, and basically I just Googled how to light everything. And I did the best of what I could with what I had. And what I had was basically.
Nobody's looking.
Oh, a desk lamp.
What I had was basically this desk lamp.
Yes.
I had this and like my grandmother's lamp that she put on like her nightstand. I took them, placed them on the side of the thing. I took the lampshade off the other one because it was not doing anything. And I took an old shoebox. I put baking paper in front of it to diffuse the light. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, perfect. It works.
Yeah.
That's all I had. That's all, you know, whatever. It's like I put that, and I bought like a safe SDA thingy of like just white paper.
Yeah.
Put it in the back. Mwah! Perfect. That's all.
No, it's quite amazing what you can do with just everyday household lamps that you just have lying around.
Right.
Well, but the tricky part is, you know, how to utilize that in a sense.
Exactly. So it's like it's the same thing. Like once you start looking into lights, you'll realize like the more expensive it gets, it doesn't mean it's 10 times more useful, you know, or more bright or anything. It's just like the tiniest conveniences, but that's about it. Is it? Mm-hmm. It works at my shoebox too, though. You know, I got paid.
Hey, that's awesome. I guess talking about your first paid gig, how did that come about? Did they see photos? Was it a photography gig or was it a portrait gig?
Like it was. Oh wait, the first paid was in what's it called, a portrait thingy, I guess. It was just shooting for this artist that came from the Netherlands, but he's not big, you know. I forgot his name. Damn.
Wow, yeah. Your first paid gig, bro.
I feel so bad. Oh my God. Yeah, but like he came from Netherlands, not for me, obviously. He was just here on vacation. And then we had like friends in common, and he was like, oh, I want to shoot some pictures. I have a camera. All right, perfect. And then he paid me. I took him like 50 pictures, and I got paid like 50 SRD. I was like, ah, it's amazing. I'm rich, bro. But yeah, like that was the first paid one, even though like I consider it to be not great. And then I guess
that was your writing, gateway drug.
Exactly. I guess like riding off of that high of that gig, I was like, ooh, that feels nice. Let me email some people. And I sent like 3 emails out to like Coffee Box, Barbo, and like one other company I forgot. Barbo never responded. I'm still waiting. But then, like, the other two companies did respond. Yeah, they better be. The other two companies did respond. One of them wasn't interested, and Coffee Box was like, yes, let's go. And I just started shooting for Coffee Box. And I was like, oh, this is great. This is awesome. I love it. It's so nice. And I guess that's how it went. Yeah.
I actually love that you actually took the initiative to approach, I guess, companies, even though, right? You know, Yeah, Parvo is in a class of its own, but I think it's in that sense, the bigger companies, there's too much management to go through.
Yes, I feel.
Like that's the thing, though. That's the thing, though, because I've heard from like other photographers that they were like just scared to ask Coffee Box because they wanted to shoot for them. They're just scared, and like I had nothing to show them. I didn't have a portfolio.
Yeah,
I literally just did one shoot. So like I went there to eat. And I liked the food. I took a picture of the food. And that's the only picture I had to show them. I took a picture of the burger. And I was like, here you go. This is what I can do. They were like, yeah, great. Perfect. So I feel like even though I didn't have anything, it's just, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get. I feel like even to me, this is a lesson because, like, I need to email people more. I feel like I've gotten comfortable where it's like, if I don't have a shoot for like a while, I'm just like, it's my free time, you know? I can relax, even though I should be like, no, I gotta get jobs. Yeah.
No, I'm happy you shared it. That's quite an interesting, or I guess, yeah, you gotta be proactive in these things. And the other company, was it so, Under Remorse? Yeah, you only showed them one photo. Like, why do you think that they decided to give you a chance and the other company, not counting Parvo, of course, didn't? What was the difference in these two clients, in your opinion?
Yeah, in my opinion. I feel like it's definitely the... I feel like I'm fairly lucky and I'm in a situation where I can turn down clients and or like I like to say I work with clients that I really like and or want to support, even though it's not always the case, you know, but like most of the time. And it's because like I really, really like Coffee Box, man. It's like I feel like even through the picture, they might be like, oh, wow, he really took, you know, the best angle, even though he could have been eating the food or something. I don't know. But like, yeah, it's like, I feel like that personal connection is very nice. For example, also one of my favorite clients is Talking Prince, because I just really love their products. And that was like even before I knew the story behind it. And then once I heard the story, I was just like, oh, I'm entirely invested. I'll do every shoot, anything you want. Let's go. Pay me though, but let's go. Yeah.
No, that rolled in quite organically. Because I think one of the biggest challenges or transitions that new photographers have that are, you know, just in the field is transitioning from that, you know, snapping some free photos from a portfolio to actually getting those paid gigs. And
yeah.
I think that's a takeaway that they could really value, you know, approach clients that you like. I think that's an important aspect that you align with.
I know, right? And I'm trying to do that more so, but like with smaller people, for example, like people I like, people whose product I like Mitoka, Wolf, but obviously Wolf is his own photographer, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like these small brands that like, I really like their shit and I really want to shoot them. But the problem is like often they are creative and they like shooting themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but I like your shit too, you know what I mean?
Well, you could, in a sense, give it your own spin and see how it goes, you know, if you really like it. But
I think like the way he's shooting and the brands he could collab, I think from my point of view, you can also ask Mitikoa, like that stuff is really dope.
Hell yeah.
It's your vibe. From what I
see. Definitely.
Ask them if they have any psychedelic bright pink neon green, you know,
type. Hell yeah, bro. Like, even, no cap. I really like their shit, man. It's really good. I love
yeah.
it. God damn.
And I guess the next question would be, you being in the space photography phase, like 2 years now, going yeah. on 3 years, would you say that the space is getting saturated, or do you welcome that more creatives oh. are coming into it?
Yes, yes, I love it. But most also because, like I said, I was never a big photography person, you know, it wasn't yeah. my thing. Like, I didn't know we had photographers here before I started. And then, like, the first one I heard of was Nigel Fokker. And I was like, oh, this
yeah.
is
pretty yeah. cool. Yeah. yeah. yeah.
This is pretty
old
cool.
friend of
and
mine.
Then, like, yeah, right? But then, like, as I found more and more and more, I was like, this is so cool. And, like, mm-hmm. some of them are real weirdos, and I love that because I fit right in. You know what I mean? I'm mm-hmm. super strange. But I'm like, yeah, but... so are they, so it's like cool, you know what I mean? And I don't mind at all. If anything, I love that there's so many photographers. I wish there were more. Like there's people I know that have a camera and I've seen some of their pictures that I love, but they just stop doing it. They just don't pick it up anymore. It's just sitting there collecting dust. It makes me so sad. But then again, like it's also a weird obsession at the moment for me, because I'm like so, like everything I see, I wanna shoot it, you know? Like even if it's not for money, even mm-hmm. if it's not with my camera, I'll just take my phone and be like, that's a cute plant. Chick. You know, like, why the fuck did I take that picture? I don't know.
Yeah.
It looked aesthetically pleasing for a second. And I might look back on it, like, in 2 weeks and be like, oh, that's an ugly-ass plant, bro. Delete. You know, it's like... it's like, I don't know. It's just that, like, obsession, I guess, with it that I have at the moment that some people might not. But I can't even blame them, you know? Like if somebody told me to like write music consistently, I'd be like, nah, son, I'll do that like once every 6 months. So I can't even blame them.
Yeah.
So did their love for photography also started their love to like vintage models, like camera models? Because I know you snatched up one.
I actually have three. Yeah, I definitely love that. That's also like I really 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 want to shoot film, and low-key yeah. I am shooting film, but I have no way of developing it, you know? Like I have yeah. like two rolls of black and white film that I have in my smallest film camera that I shoot every now and then, but like
yeah.
it's just gonna sit there for at least a few years until I can develop it.
Because you snatched up like I think it's a Yashica model.
Yes, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was looking at it on Facebook. I was like, yo, somebody is selling a vintage model. Like bro. Perfectly working and everything. And I was like,
Man.
and then it turns out there were actually two. You took up one and the other one was already sold. So it was like...
Were there two? Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was the same one that was being sold by two people. I'm pretty sure. Here's what I think happened, right? Because I saw it. I saw 4 hours ago posted. I was like, oh, yeah. I want it. I need it. And I went.
Yeah.
I bought it. And then I as I was like scrolling again, I saw the same one with the same things that comes with mine, the one that I got. So I'm pretty sure it was the same guy. I mean, the same product, just by a different guy. And then his one was way more expensive. So he was obviously, obviously one of them didn't know what they had. And the other one was trying to make some money off of it. I was like, all right, you know, I don't mind the hustle, but I got a good price. So I'm happy.
Yeah. So basically, Diego, because Diego is like, I don't know what this. So basically, somebody was selling like an old model, from the maker Yashica, some old Japanese camera model, but it's basically the one with like two lenses, and when you shoot it, it goes on a film, so you can create like on a, I believe a 30 millimeter film, and so it's like oh he's bringing it. Oh, I thought you were bringing it.
I am.
Oh.
Yeah. Are you ready?
Yeah, big reveal. Let's go. All
right. Okay, wait. Let's start with a small reveal. So I have like a very small, I don't even know what it's called. Like it shoots half of 35 millimeter film. Mm-hmm. I have that one, but it's like all the way downstairs.
12 something?
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. And then
like, I think a 12.8 or something like that. Let me check it out.
And then I have this one.
Wait, is that a Minolta?
It's a Praktika.
Oh, Praktika.
Very practical.
Bro. I saw a bunch of the Minoltas also.
Yeah, but those are expensive. Like people are trying to sell it for like 1500 SRD. I'm like, nah. Yeah. I got this for free. For free.
Bro. What?
Yeah.
No. Those things.
And the small one.
The small one I got,
it cost me like 100 SRD, which honestly to me is like nothing because it's so good and it works. I have film in it right now. I'm shooting. It's like wow.
Okay, well, walk us through how you found these free and 100 SRD products.
That's
beautiful. Oh, that is beautiful.
That boy. Oh.
That is beautiful.
Oh my god. And then it opens up right here. Oh my god, bro.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, I see myself.
Yeah.
Hey. When I'm back, gotta give it a spin.
Yeah.
Give it a sniff test.
But first, ask if you have connections to who can develop like film, because otherwise we'll be sitting we're stuck with that.
Bro.
Yeah, so I guess now they just have some shelf life until you find that.
Exactly, right? Exactly. It's like back in the days.
In that sense, they're still pretty nice. It's really nice just to have it and, you know.
Right?
That
like,
feeling.
To me, like, I don't... You know how sometimes people are like, oh, it's like the universe is telling me something. I'm like, first of all, that's bullshit. But secondly, I feel like the universe is telling me something. You know what I mean? It's like, I got them for like free and I did pay for like two of them, but like not a lot of money. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. This is so crazy. What are the odds? I like it. It's very nice.
How did you find them in the first place? Were they just on the marketplace, on Facebook,
mutual friends? All three of them. Just marketplace. It's... Like the first one I got was this one, the black Praktika.
Yeah.
It was like entirely free. That's the only one that doesn't work though. Like the swing thingy is stuck. It was completely free. What's... Like I went to the guy. He was like, yeah, I'm giving it away for free. I don't know if it works. And I was like, all right, I don't mind, you know. And it'll probably just sit on my shelf. It looks cool. Mm. I'm like, hell yeah. And he just gave it to me. So it was super weird. Because, like, it felt so strange. It felt surreal. I was like, at some point, he's got to be like, okay, you want it this much. Because I was super hyped. I was, like, jittery. I was like, I need it. You know what I mean? I was like, at some point, he has to be like, okay, fine. And give me, like, money. But he didn't. Such a nice dude.
Awesome.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I checked it out. You have a 70, you have a 65, a 70. You have a 35, like what you have right now. And yeah, you said you had the other one was much smaller. I think that's the 16. That's the 16.
Oh, yeah, entirely possible.
Yeah, and the other one is much smaller. That's the 8. Super 8. Super 8.
No, I think it's the 16. It's like half of a
35.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
man,
those aside.
Congrats.
Yeah, awesome. Those collectibles aside for now. Well, what's your main shooter that you actually use for your digital?
What's the workhorse?
I use.
Hello.
With the handle and everything. Is that a Sony?
Yo, it is. It's a Sony A6300.
Ooh. Nice. Awesome.
Boy.
Those are really I love them. I love the click. You also have one?
Sony 6500, oh. My main shooter.
6500.
Oh,
hell.
Nice. Yay.
Yay.
Even got a cage and well, the handle's nice. Not attached to it now.
Nice.
Oh, man. At work?
No,
at
bro,
work,
the handle is essential for me.
At work, I'm using an A6000.
Oh, hell yeah,
so
bro.
I know how it feels. I know everything. Like, yeah, it's, I'm so in love with it. I'm thinking of, yeah, purchasing.
No, I love the Sony A6000 series. I yes, used to have a Nikon back in the day, but that was like big, bulky, the lenses as well. It wasn't really convenient for traveling. And like, it was a full frame camera also. But then the first time I shot Sony in my hand was I was on an outing with Nigel. Nigel had the Sony, and I was like, this is so light, this is so and then I saw Giorgio using it for film. He had his dad's old one, I think, and he was using that for film, shooting some sample shots. And like, whoa, this is so much better than the Nikon for film.
Yes,
decided to sell all my Nikon gear. And from a technical aspect, I downgraded in a sense, but yeah,
no.
Best decision I made.
No. You're not downgrading anything. Like, because
the weird part is that
I'm gonna show you something quick. So I lent this one. This is not mine. I lent it from my cousin. This is what I really learned how to use a camera. This is
I can't see anything. Am I supposed to
see it? Oh, wait. Yeah, do you see it now?
Well, I see the silhouette and, you know, the rim light.
Okay. Yeah, wait, hold on. Maybe, oh no, I cannot put my flashlight on. But anyhow, this is the Nikon D3500.
Okay, I generally know what it looks like, yeah.
Okay, and then... Yes, and then I switched up to, at my workplace, they have the A6000. They had another Nikon, but it was from another person. And then they had their own camera to what they can shoot photos and shoot their videos. And I checked it, I was like, okay, A6. A6000. I was like, okay, small. And then I started working with it, like the photos, whew, crispy, like literally, like the smallest thing, you can do a lot. Like the film, everything. Like when you grade it, like, but you have to put the ISO a bit higher normally than like the Nikon. That's how I found out that Sony, it has some small thing about it, but. You learn with the,
For video especially, I think Sony has great ISO profiles like their ISO standards are pretty, for low light especially, it's pretty damn good for what you get.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was a bit iffy at first, you know, live view, but once I got used to it, I was, you know, the traditional viewfinder, gotta look like the photographer, but once I got used to live view, I can't go back to the viewfinder, man. It is like what you see, you can actually see what you're getting.
Exactly,
there.
Right? Oh my God, it's fantastic. Like the weird part is that like the reason I got this also in the A6000 lineup is also because of Nigel. Because like he's the first photographer I found and I was like, oh, this is great. And I asked him what he uses and whatnot. And then I went on a shoot with him. And I was like, yo, he's using an A6000 and he's like got vintage glass.
He has
amazing.
A lot of nice glass.
Amazing. And I was like, all right, I'm going to get one in those. And then, let's go from there. Good shit.
Yeah, I was also looking at the A7 series, but the full frame series. But then I was like, the price gap, is it worth it for that marginal, you know? And it's more weight too. Okay, but I really want to go for the convenience, lightweight. maybe if I set up a studio in the future, then I'll get into those. But I mean, this is just your grab and go camera.
I would kill for a full frame. I would.
You want to buy one? Somebody is selling like a whole package,
but fuck that price.
Yeah, $2,000, bro.
Exactly, and like he doesn't want to sell it like separately. That's not gonna work.
Yeah, because yeah, I was going for the A5000. I saw he's selling the A5000. I was like, that's close to the A6, so why not try it? I was like, yo, do you sell it separate? He was like, nope, the whole package. I was like, okay, cool.
Bye. Good luck.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
No. But that guy's pictures are really good too.
he has good video graphics also. Like he makes.
Oh yeah, true.
Yeah.
His transitions are nice. I like it.
He was also on the Instagram. The Instagram Expo. What's his name again?
Jake.
They call him Taco at Play. Taco at Play. Remember?
Yeah.
Diego.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Jake. Jake.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jake. Right. See?
Taco
yeah,
at Play. Yeah.
Jake is pretty cool.
He's pretty cool.
I like his style.
Tell him to sell me his face stuff and like loose.
And his editing. Yeah. He has a thing for editing. Really.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, surreal scenes.
Looks great. I love it.
and he portrays it also really good in TikTok, because I'm saying that because I remember this afternoon I just opened my phone. I was like, let me check something on my cousin on his TikTok, and I went to the For You page and I saw Jake. I was like, nice, really nice. Like some kind of editing stuff. And what's up?
Yeah. I feel like I've only seen one or two of his TikToks, and he was doing those transition things, which I love. And they're so good. I don't even have TikTok on my phone, but I love those transition things. Those are so creative. God damn. The amount of work that must go into it, I respect it.
I don't have time for that. I'm just going to sync my stuff and that's it. Bye.
Shit, just do a little dance. It's like
I don't do those.
Damn.
No, hey, no, I don't do all those
cool
things.
Gets danced.
No.
No, man. I guess Gary, it's like photography basically your full time like occupation now. You do anything else outside music and photography?
No, it's basically where I make most of my money, but that's also because I went back to school this year, which is a great year to choose that, you know, because all the schools shut down. Yeah.
It actually is,
in some type of way, it feels good. But like, yeah, I went back to school.
Time now.
Exactly. Too much of it. It's amazing. And yeah, so like I'm split between school, photography jobs, and then like, you know, I'll make music whenever I can, but it's not very high on the priority list.
Yeah.
You know? Also because like, unlike with photography, I feel like you can't just crank out music unless you're doing like pop or whatever, you know, it's just like generic shit, you know? But like, I feel like my favorite type of music is music that feels lived through, you know, it feels lived in. Like it's been sitting in their mind for months and months. They've been working on it for months and months. And then, you know, eventually they're like, all right, I feel like this tells a good enough story. I'm going to release it to the world, you know, be free. And then, yeah, you know, I try to do that as well. You know, it's like, I don't want to just crank out bullshit. I want to live through something. And then I have something to sing about or whatever, you know.
No, you're living through some shit right now.
Oh yeah, bro.
The whole year.
Exactly. Hey, thanks for the inspiration. Hey,
for me personally, 2020 has been the best year so far.
What? Damn.
Yeah.
Honestly, this guy.
It's been ups and downs, bro. I wouldn't say best.
Diego needs an episode in Adventure Time, because the whole way he's saying it, like, 20 is the best year. I'm like, bro, okay.
Bro, don't jinx it. Don't jinx it, man.
even if it's got jinxed.
Yeah. Shit.
It's been an interesting few months, man. You know, the weird part is, like, on my birthday is when the fucking virus, like, officially came to our country. I was like, oh, this is the worst birthday present ever, man. Shit.
Well, you got time now. You have to look past the first, you know, impression.
That's true. Just
chill. Well, what made you decide to go back or to go to FIR? Well, what's your course on?
Honestly, I'm not very. It wasn't my first choice, you know, but at the same time, I already dropped out of high school a few years ago, and then I went back, finished it afterwards, but I dropped out in the initial phase, right? And then it's just like I've lived through that part of like just being a dropout with no papers at all, and it's like I don't want to do that, man. Like, it's not just the fact that I'll have to work a lot harder to make the same amount of money, it's just so stressful, like, knowing that I have nothing to fall back on. So, like, even if I don't finish this course or whatever, it'll feel a lot better, you know? Like, it feels like I'm finally doing something. Even though FIR is not a great school, honestly. They're not great. The teachers are not great. But, you know, who cares? I never liked teachers anyway. I'll study it myself, you know? Fuck them.
Yeah.
I'm just there to get the paper. Oh,
Oh, but I guess aside from the teachers, is there any specific course you're taking that?
I'm studying international business management because that's very generic, and I feel like it can be applied to anything.
Definitely.
Wow.
Not that's too specific.
That is a sound argument, in my opinion.
So I think
exactly
the whole sentence is the whole essay if the teacher asks, so why did you choose this school? I'm like, okay, better than it can be applied
exactly,
anywhere.
Bro.
That's it.
It's an elevator pitch.
That's exactly. Hey, that's a point. That's a point right there. But we're not using elevator, so yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, one story staircase pitch for whatever you want to call it. No, but I think just the business, I guess you're already experiencing it, but just the business in general, it's something you can apply to anything. And not sure if those facial expressions help, but they make an impression. But it's up to you to, you know, navigate through that.
But I also feel like I really want to do something, and I'm gravitating towards something with clothes, just to, like, even if it fails, if it fails, I'll have learned more from it than if I didn't do it at all, you know? So yeah. I want to do something. I don't know. Cause like, I see so many cool brands. I'm like, I can never top those. So like, what am I going to do? I don't know, but I'm still thinking of something. I want to do something else. Not something else, yes. Something as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not just pictures.
And that's part of being the creator.
Exactly, right?
Yep.
Making anything is in the creative space. And the business language is just to, you know, get that transactional part in it. Cha-ching.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's to make those late hours getting paid. That's the business side. That's the whole business side. Yeah. Basically, creators are literally like problem solvers because someone has a problem. And by creating something for them, it's like we're creating a creative solution for their problem. Like, for instance, CoffeeBox needed some pictures to get fired up, to get people hyped up about their products or the shop. Hey, you came up with a solution by giving them handing over, like, yo, I can make pictures, I can set you guys up. And that's the whole thing. And that's the brand. Your brand is basically you're saying, hey, I'm making pictures. This is the vibe I'm giving by making this certain, like a certain niche of pictures. And you like it? That if you feel like your customers want to have that feel, then let's do this and pay me for that. And that's hell the business side.
You know, something that I struggle with is like the balance between like, because for example, since we're talking about Coffee Box, I'll give them as an example. Like they hired me, I did a whole bunch of shoots for them. They liked it. And eventually I started buying more gear and I was like, all right, I'm going to up the price a little bit. And then I did, and they were like, cool. And it just kept going. And then eventually they stopped hiring me and they hired other people, which I don't mind, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, do your thing, feel it out, you know, see which one you like better. But the thing that annoys me is that like, sometimes they'll post pictures. I'm like, yeah, cool. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, this is so bad. Don't post this. I can do it better. You know what I mean? And then like, I'm at this crossroads where I'm like, see, like I want to do it better because I want more people to buy your shit, you know, so you can pay me. But I also don't want to lower my price. And it's like, it's that tough decision because for example, I did such a great picture for them just this weekend because they finally hired me again. Hell yes. Money. But and like, dude, when I look at these pictures, I'm not allowed to show them because like they're going to reveal it, I think, next month. But like, when I look at them, I'm like, yo, I'm so good. How did I do that? And then I'm like, okay, there's no way that like this is going to fit in with their photography at the moment. So like, I'm just hoping that they keep hiring me to give them like a consistent aesthetic.
Yeah,
I feel like they've been changing too much lately. In the beginning, it was like pretty consistent. And now it's like just a random white thing. And I'm like, white visuals. I'm like, ah, it hurts. It's fine. You know, it's fine. It'll be fine.
No, I think that's something that's going to be a constant battle, because especially with different, this was just one example, but yeah, it's in that engagement, it's a relational engagement that you gotta align, both parties need to align. So yeah, that's going to be a continuous challenge, but hey, in a sense, the more you do it, the thing is, once you get comfortable with it, as you said previously, you get complacent. So exactly, this keeps you alert in a sense, you know, gotta up my game, et cetera, et cetera.
That's also why I really like that there's like so many photographers, like small, big or whatever, because there's like so many, for example, Taco at Play, right? Like I like his pictures. And then like every now and then I'm like completely, completely floored by one of his edits specifically. I'm like, yo, this is so good. I need to go out and shoot something, you know? Like, I'm lacking.
Yeah, that motivates you.
Exactly. I love that. I love that. Healthy competition.
Yeah. That's exactly what's in it. Because it brings you up. But in like when you have an idea and you drop it, and they might even think the same thing of your work, and they'll be like, yo, but I haven't thought about that. So they bring it a little notch over, and that's you guys climbing up. It's like bringing each other's value out of each other.
And that's for the industry in general, to uplift the whole industry, because it's kind of still taken for granted, the creative space, especially for the big corporates, which we shall not name. You already mentioned some.
Yes, I entirely agree.
No, but I think we could go on for a bit more. Like, I got things on top of my head that we could dive in, but I think we should wrap this episode up now, and maybe we'll have a follow up on more specific topics. But it's been a pleasure to have you on. You've been really, you know, entertaining and energetic, showing those dance moves.
Cool. Yeah, I love the fact that you gotta quit while you're ahead, you know what I mean? Like, what if this gets boring in like 30 minutes? Can't risk it.
No, that's not it. It's just, you know, I have a short attention span, so after a while, my thoughts start to drift, and then I need to put in more effort to, you know, focus on what you're saying.
Understandable. I feel. Me in school, high key.
So, anyways, where can people find you? What are you up to? Anything specific they can look forward to aside from your album release? And any last messages?
I mean, stay in school, I guess. Eat your vegetables, you know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know, man. I'm not doing anything. Don't listen to my music. Fuck my music. Go like my pictures on, like, Photos by Francis. That's about it, man. You know?
You see that right there? That's reverse psychology. He said, like, don't like it. And people are like, what is this music?
And don't tell me what to do.
It's been done. It's been proven.
Oh, my God. No, but like I feel like there's still definitely a part of me that like doesn't like my music and doesn't want people to know it exists, at least not like in this moment. I feel like maybe in like 10 years I'll be like, hey, remember that song? Yeah, that was a good song, wasn't it? But not right now. I don't care about it right now.
It needs to age like fine wine.
Exactly. Yes. Or milk, you know, who knows? Time will tell. Oh, man. It's been a pleasure, awesome. Though.
Yeah, thank no, happy to have you on.
Have a good day, my friend.
Yeah, Devin, last thoughts, final words.
I have a final thought. Maybe we should do a mega session one time. You know, get a bunch of these kind of talks. Like this is good, but sometimes you just need some few more talks and us.
Some more people. That's definitely, we got that projected for a future episode. We just need to get everyone on board, you know.
And the timing.
Down to it, Gary.
Hell yeah.
Probably,
bro.
Maybe, what would be cool, maybe once I'm back, especially, we could have, you know, a sit down if people are allowed to get together and have it real, you know, a round table. Soon. Sooner than you think.
hey, and in 4 months it's already 2021. So
that's true.
You could definitely say next year. So soon is not. Yeah. Yeah.
You'll know. You guys will know. Yeah, you guys will know. Right. But anyways, that's been it for this episode of Creative Combos. Episodes are released on all the podcasting platforms, Spotify, iTunes.